Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Over the past several weeks, we've been keeping a close eye on developments with PG&E and the newest rate hike that's now in place. And we've reported the utility wants to raise rates even more in the coming months, arguing the repeated increases are to cover safety upgrades largely tied to wildfires. The estimate from the ratepayer advocacy organization TURN says the increases could push the average monthly bill to $300, which is particularly a strain if you're low, middle, or on a fixed income or housing insecure. And outside of state utility regulators who approve these increases, there doesn't seem to be an end to rate hikes as long as the California Public Utilities Commission gives its blessing. Many people have ideas on how to change this system, but nothing at the moment seems to stick. We invited PG&E to join us, but they were unable to make it. But Central Valley Congress member Representative Josh Harder has been an outspoken critic of PG&E's rate hikes. He joins us now from Washington, D.C. to talk solutions. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Congressman Harder, you represent the 9th District, so that includes places like Stockton, Lodi, Manteca. And according to the latest census data, the median household income is $86,000. The average rent in your district is $1,600, and about 1 in 10 live under the poverty line. You mentioned in your press release calling out PG&E that you have been hearing a lot from your constituents. What are they telling you?
People are telling us enough is enough. We've already seen PG&E double their rates over the last 10 years, and that was before their latest price increase. Last summer's heat wave devastated our community in terms of the bills that folks were facing afterwards. I was having bills sent to me from all across our area, including some as high as $1,000 a month just to keep up the air conditioning. People have said enough is enough.
Okay, so you're getting this messaging from your constituents. You now publicly have called out PG&E. This needs to come to an end. What can you do at the federal level as a Congress member? I mean, my understanding is that this is a state issue and it falls on state utility regulators.
Absolutely, that the PUC should be doing more to keep PG&E in check. Those are the folks in Sacramento who are in charge of making sure that these rate increases are not exorbitant. I don't think they've been doing a very good job. And so I think we need federal authority as well. Think about your rent. Right now, there are legal limits to how much and how often your landlord can hike up your rent. And that makes all the sense in the world because you could lose your housing if you have an unanticipated expense that blows your budget. You know, frankly, I think we should have those same controls for the price increases that a utility company like PG&E is making in a particular year.
When you say that the feds should step in, I mean, is this FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission? I mean, what realistically can happen at the federal level to change rate hikes, to curb them, or to at least put pressure to reduce them?
I think at the very least, we should have federal legislation that limits the number of price increases a utility company can make in a year. A lot of this comes down to transparency. We know that PG&E has to upgrade their infrastructure. Frankly, I think they can pay for it a lot of different ways. They paid their CEO $50 million a year. Maybe they can find some resources to upgrade their infrastructure from their executive bonuses. But the least that we want is to make sure that they come about this price increase in a transparent way. Right now, if this goes as planned, families will be getting their bills in March and wondering what the heck happened.
I do have to fact check you on that. PG&E does not pay Patty Poppe $50 million a year. I talked to PG&E about this back in 2022. Over $40 million of that. This stems from 2021. Patty Poppe, when she left her previous utility company, over $40 million was a one-time equity payment. I believe her salary is more in line with benefits, around $14 million. And PG&E says that when you look at other CEOs in investor-owned utility companies, Patty Poppe CEO is in the middle of the pack. So is there a larger problem, a larger issue that you have with how investor-owned utility CEOs are compensated?
I spent my career working in the private sector, and I can tell you without a doubt that I have never seen a company that paid its CEOs $50 million a year in 2021, which they did the same year that PG&E declared bankruptcy. And to say that a $14 million a year salary today is somehow any better when they have unpaid liabilities and they are preventing from themselves from actually upgrading their infrastructure and strengthening their efforts against wildfires, I think makes no sense at all. Ultimately, there needs to be a watchdog. And if the California Public Utilities Commission is not acting as that watchdog, then we need federal authorities to do that.
Is this just a California issue? Is this just a PG&E issue? They are the largest utility company, I believe, in the country. They serve 16 million customers here in California. Or when you're talking to your colleagues at the federal level, other Congress members, say in like Florida or other states, is this a bigger issue?
It's absolutely a bigger issue. It's not a shock that if you have a public utility that has a natural monopoly in a given part of a state and very cushy relations with the regulators that are overseeing them in the state's capital, that you're going to have that Public Utilities Commission go off the rails a little bit. And that's exactly what we're seeing in Sacramento right now, but it's not a California-specific story. We've seen a lot of other states have that exact same problem. And that's why I think federal legislation makes sense, because clearly the way that we're doing it right now in California is broken.
When it comes to California, I understand that you represent a district at the national level. Have you talked with Governor Newsom or the CPUC? When you're talking about kind of a compliance with PG&E and how it operates, they're part of that.
We have. We talked to our colleagues in the California State Legislature, and I think that there's a number of legislative priorities that folks are moving in Sacramento as well. It can't happen soon enough. We've already seen the impacts of this over the last decade when PG&E has doubled their rates. And now to have a 13% increase in November and then asking for another price hike just a few weeks later, there's no end to what PG&E's greed is going to continue to ask for. And it's not that they're actually putting this money where it needs to be. So there needs to be checks and balances in this system. And frankly, I think it's absolutely the case that both legislators in Sacramento and in D.C. should be doing more to make sure that that happens.
So given that you have talked to people at the state level, whether it's like the CPUC, what are they telling you? Do they agree with you? Because they did approve the latest rate increase.
They did. I've been talking to folks in the state legislature, and that's one of the problems with the California Public Utilities Commission is they don't have as many checks and balances with the state legislature as they need. And so you have, folks that don't have a whole lot of people watching their efforts, and then they only know about it when they see the price increases a couple of weeks or a couple months later. So my goal is to make sure that we're keeping our eye on the ball in D.C., and I think the best first step is to make sure that we are limiting the number of price increases that a utility company like PG&E can do in any given year.
Yeah, as I mentioned, we invited PG&E to come on. They were not available today, but they did share with us an email and some statements ahead of this conversation because they knew that we were going to be talking to you. And overall, I think they take issue with how you're framing these increases. For example, leaving out storm damage, which was extensive from last year's winter storms. It included like more than a dozen atmospheric rivers in which PG&E says they restored power to over 7 million customers. How do you expect the utility company to make up for those losses outside of rate increases?
Well, I have another bill that is asking to take clawback bonuses from their executives the year that they went bankrupt. Why should they be giving out tens of millions of dollars in bonuses when they're going bankrupt and not investing that money into their infrastructure? And so I think if you look at the history of PG&E, we have seen repeated mismanagement, not by the folks on the ground who are working hard to make sure that our power lines stay open, but by the elite executives that continue to hand themselves multi-million dollar paychecks instead of putting those resources where they're absolutely needed, fixing the storm damage, addressing the risk of wildfires. Let's invest in that instead of paying folks way too much money when they frankly, don't really need it because they're not doing a good job.
You mentioned that you have a bill. I mean, are there other lawmakers in other states, other Congress members that are on board with this? How are you working with Congress members across the country?
We're building a big coalition. I think this should be one of the most bipartisan ideas out there. One of the things that I learned in the private sector is if people aren't doing a good job, then you replace them and you bring in a new team. We, I think, need that in PG&E, given the history of mismanagement we've seen in this utility. They're continuing to ask for one price increase after another. And if you look back and you look at their budget and what have they done with all of the money that has been given to PG&E, they clearly have not invested it appropriately because the risk of wildfires, the risk of storm damage hasn't gone down.
Hmm. Given that, you know, since you're at the national level, have you spoken with the Biden administration, perhaps, you know, Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm about this?
We're gonna work on this legislation and absolutely send it to folks. I think this is something that should get a lot of support because I think this is something that we, again, mirrors the same type of legal limits that we already have for rental properties.
Hmm. According to the Wall Street Journal, PG&E asked the federal government, the Department of Energy, for a $7 billion loan last year. I mean, so this is another connection of how PG&E, you know, works with or is impacted by the federal government. Is this something that you're aware of? Is this regular for utility companies across the country to apply for loans like this?
There were a lot. I think the loan that you're referring to was specifically as part of the Inflation Reduction Act, which was focused on trying to make sure that we're modernizing utilities, pushing them to 100% renewable energy, and also trying to make sure that we're safeguarding them from climate change, from those wildfires that are clearly a huge problem across California. Again, those are the sorts of things that I think are an appropriate way for PG&E to pay for its costs. I absolutely agree that we need to upgrade PG&E's infrastructure. Frankly, I think that should have been done decades ago. There are so many very clear things that PG&E could do. For instance, taking their power lines and putting them below ground. I know that's significantly more expensive, but it dramatically decreases the risk of wildfire damage. I think we can actually make sure that there are loans and grants for programs like that instead of the way that PG&E is currently using their rate increases. And I think that they have to account for the rate increases that they've already had just over the last decade.
We've had Mark Tomey on before, and he's the executive director of TURN. That is a ratepayer advocacy organization. It stands for the Utility Reform Network. And he had a couple proposals. I'm curious if you're in support of this. I mean, he proposes capping utility rates at the rate of inflation of Social Security or basing rates on income. What do you think of these proposals?
I think some type of cap, whether on the amount of price increases or on the number of price increases, makes a lot of sense, whether it's inflation or something else. I think the key challenge with PG&E is that PG&E is more subject to climate change than most other businesses. And so that's why we're seeing the wildfires and the storms become a key problem. So I have no issue with the fact that this infrastructure needs to be upgraded, but why should it be done in a non-transparent way with one rate increase after another? But I absolutely agree that similar to a lot of rent control we already have, that some sort of cap probably makes sense to give family certainty.
You've called PG&E a monopoly. Do you think it should be broken up?
I think it already is being broken up in a lot of places in Northern California. Many cities are moving to local cooperatives because it's frankly a heck of a lot cheaper than PG&E. Unfortunately, they're sort of doing that against the efforts of PG&E and the Public Utilities Commission, which is trying to stop it. But one of the things that we can do is locally make sure that every single city in Northern California has the opportunity to form one of these utility cooperatives to give lower prices to their ratepayers.
Have you directly spoken with PG&E CEO Patty Poppe or anyone with the utility company? And how, if so, how have those conversations gone?
We've kept them in close updates on our bills and legislation. Obviously, this is something that I've worked on for a long time. And
what
I think
do they
that
think
they
about
would say,
it?
I think, well, obviously, they're not very supportive of what we're trying to do here. And they argue that they need this money. I think that makes, you know, a little bit of sense. Certainly, they need to upgrade their infrastructure. But this is not a problem that was created just over the last couple months. PG&E spent years and years paying these exorbitant executive salaries and bonuses. at the cost of actually upgrading their infrastructure. And now, when we see these natural disasters, they're just trying to put the cost of those disasters onto the ratepayers instead of to the company that was the root cause of why those disasters had such damage to begin with.
When it comes to the bill that you're talking about, also the proposal for a coalition nationally, what stage are you in at that point? I mean, where are we? And realistically, I mean, how do you see this moving forward, say, like this year?
I think it can happen soon enough. I don't think PG&E is going to stop with their latest rate increase proposal. I think they're going to continue to push and push and push until either the Public Utilities Commission grows a spine or we have further state or federal legislation that has some set of standard that actually makes sure that we're able to hold PG&E's feet to the fire here. So we're going to try to make this as broad a coalition as we can. As I said earlier, there are a lot of states that are seeing a similar set of challenges, and hopefully we can make this a bipartisan success.
Just so I understand, when it comes to federal energy regulators, FERC, do they oversee state regulators like the CPUC?
Not directly. FERC's jurisdiction is more about the transmission. They don't have direct jurisdiction today over these types of rate increases, but there's no reason why there can't be more checks and balances in this process, because clearly, as I said, the way it's working right now is broken.
Finally, I mean, as you are well aware, California is moving towards a more electrified system with electric vehicles, for example, you know, getting off of gas stoves and just going more towards electric appliances. How confident are you that California, and wrapped within that is a utility company like PG&E, as well as other ones in Southern California, that it can be a reliable, affordable source of energy? And if I think you're going to say you're not very confident, what alternatives are there? Because California is moving in this direction regardless.
We need to modernize our grid across California. We remember just a couple decades ago how devastating the brownouts and blackouts were. Now, when we're seeing 115, 120 degree summers, the risk of those blackouts is even more devastating, and not just from air conditioning. To your point, the entire life that somebody is living is now connected to the grid, whether it's their car, whether it's their job. We need
medical
to make sure
devices.
Medical devices, there absolutely is a need for reliable and affordable electricity everywhere you go. And unfortunately, I'm not sure that PG&E is going to be able to deliver that. So that's why I think we need a watchdog here that's going to make sure that PG&E is held to account. I hope the PUC can do that. If not, then we're going to supplement that or try to supplement that through federal authority. The second thing that I'd really like to see a much greater role for, as I said before, is these localized city-based cooperatives. You know, the city of Stockton is moving to one of those cooperatives. It can't happen soon enough because it's going to lower rates and it's going to create a more reliable source of energy for the folks that live within that city. There's no reason why most places in Northern California can't have something like that. And so they don't have to rely just on what PG&E is providing.
Representative Harder, thank you for the time.
Thank you.
That is Congressmember Josh Harder, and we want to reiterate that we did invite PG&E CEO Patty Poppe on today, but she was unavailable. Up next, Sac City High School is among the first in the state training students as EV technicians. We'll learn about the pilot program that creates a pathway for a career in electric and hybrid vehicles. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.